100 days, 100 nights to know a man's heart. 100 days, 100 nights to know a man's heart. And a little more before he knows it's all wrong. You know a man can wait upon of a saint.
Contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to a Friday. Welcome to it, everyone. I am Nicole Sandler. Coming to you live on this the day before, well, the 99th day of the Dump administration. If you listen to the pre-show music today, they were actually all songs that are included in today's What's News News Roundup coming up in just a few minutes, wrapping up with 100 days, 100 nights. It just fit, right? And I got to do a shout out to Sharon Jones. That's who was singing, Sharon Jones and the Dap King Band. Sharon Jones unfortunately passed away last June from, I believe, pancreatic cancer. I just wanted to give her some props there because she was oh so good. You know, one of the people who, I won't even go there. Let's go back to this. So tomorrow marks 100 days since Donald Trump took office. It is improbable as it seems. Here we are. And, you know, I thought I would do sort of a roundup of what happened over the last 100 days. And then I thought, no, I won't subject myself to that. I certainly won't subject you to it. Especially after reading, I'm on a bunch of different email lists, and Vice News sent out a sort of their roundup of just what happened in this past week. And let me share it with you. Week 14, they write in one sentence. You ready? President Donald, I still can't say it, Dump, feuded with Democrats all week over a potential government shutdown, signed executive actions targeting Obama-era regulations of banks, agriculture, national monuments, and offshore drilling, promised that Mexico will eventually pay for the wall in some form at a later date, called his record-low approval ratings fake, insisted the UN push for more sanctions against North Korea, implemented more sanctions against Syria, finally got his Secretary of Agriculture confirmed, had another executive order seeking to cut off federal funding to sanctuary cities blocked by a federal judge, pushed new tariffs against Canada, announced a massive tax reform plan. It was just a single page of bulleted ideas, revived the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, said he has, quote, absolutely considered breaking up the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, gave the Pentagon more authority to put troops on the ground in Iraq and Syria, warned of a major, major conflict with North Korea, and admitted being president is tougher than he thought it would be. Oh, my God. In honor of Donald Trump and his first 100 days in office, something we haven't done in a while, but I think it's time for a song. Everybody, sing along.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Asshole. His name is
Donald Trump.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Oh, yeah. So there you go. That for Dump. There's other news today. We have Greg Palast coming up, so I want to get through a few things. Yes, feel free to resign, asshole. Comment from the chat room. Greg Palast is coming up today. You know, the filmmaker, author, journalist. So we're going to spend most of our time today with Greg. So let me just run down some of the other news that came down the pike since we last met. I had mentioned a few days ago about Alex Jones. When I do an imitation of Alex Jones, I get a sore throat for days after. So I'm not going to try that anymore. But, you know, he's been embroiled in this custody battle with his ex-wife. Apparently, their divorce went through a few years ago. And for whatever reason, he's had physical custody of their three kids. Well, no more. Alex Jones lost his court battle against his ex-wife after a 10-day trial in Tejas. It was decided that he would not get custody of his three children. According to BuzzFeed, the jury deliberated for about 9.5 hours and released the ruling late last night. Kelly Jones will continue joint custody of the children with the ability, but she will get to decide where the children live. Before this case, they had been living with him and had only limited and supervised visitations with the children. So now it'll be reversed, and that's good news. You know, we occasionally do the Florida file, so I got a quickie for you today.
Boy, Florida.
I'm telling you, this story was the top above the fold lead story in the South Florida Sun Sentinel today. And it sort of answers the question why I no longer subscribe to the South Florida Sun Sentinel. I'm just going to read it to you because I can't paraphrase this. It's just, you'll understand. When three men wearing bright red lipstick, heavy makeup, and women's clothing walked into a jewelry store and said they were shopping for an engagement ring this month, workers quickly realized they were dealing with an unusual band of gun-toting robbers. So far, authorities said they've identified two of the wanted men. Jerome Simmons, 29, of Fort Lauderdale, was arrested as he crawled out of a nearby bush, sporting only his boxer shorts, socks, makeup, and carrying a walkie-talkie in his hand. A pink sweatshirt, pink sweatpants, a wig, and a pair of shoes were found under a nearby vehicle. Police said. Simmons was in federal court in Fort Lauderdale on Thursday, and a judge ordered he'll remain jailed pending trial. Investigators are still looking for Adrian Hardy of Broward County, who they say got away from the April 13th jewelry store holdup in Port St. Lucie by kidnapping a family of four and forcing them to drive him home to Broward County. Investigators have not yet publicly identified the third robbery suspect, and a fourth man, they say, was supposed to be the lookout and getaway driver. See, that's the quintessential Florida story. In other news, Dump, yeah, that guy, spoke to the NRA today. You know, I didn't watch it. I was out. I had an appointment this morning. But I got home in time to see our pal Laffy tweeting the end of it, where apparently he closed out his talk by saying, "To NRA, I can honestly say I will never let you down." And then what, you know, and then Laffy wondered why TV aired the whole thing live. But there is a bit of positivity here. The Los Angeles City Council committee that was, I guess, debating this just advanced an impeach Trump resolution to the full council. So what's going to happen? The Los Angeles City Council will vote on a resolution for an impeachment investigation of Donald Trump. I love that. Love that. Now, speaking of LA, I can't let today and this week end without noting that tomorrow, in addition to being Dump's 100th day in office, tomorrow marks the 25th anniversary of the LA riots that followed the verdict in the trial of the cops who beat Rodney King. 25 years. Wow. This was before cell phone video was everywhere. But in an interview much later, Rodney King said that he led the cops on this chase to end near a populated area. In this case, it was an apartment complex where he hoped someone would be a witness because he knew there were a bunch of cop cars following him, and he just knew something bad was going to happen. So there was a witness. It wound up being a guy who thankfully pulled out a video camera when he saw the commotion that turned into a brutal beating. So back then, I'll never forget the day that the verdict was to be announced. I was working at a radio station in Los Angeles, KLOS. The radio station was where it still is, on La Cienega Boulevard, La Cienega just north of Jefferson, which really was maybe 3 or 4 miles from the intersection of Florence and Normandy, where the trucker, Reginald Denny, was pulled out of his truck and beaten almost to death. And what happened, we got word, okay, the verdict was expected, whatever. I think it was like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I produced the Mark and Brian program back then. And we were off the air at 10, but I worked all day. So I was sitting in my office with the KLOS was owned by ABC, at that time, probably Disney. They were building us a new building, which was to be right behind the old building. And back then you could still smoke inside. Yes, back then I smoked cigarettes. And my friend Rhonda Cherney, who was one of the salespeople, who is still in the sales department at KLOS 25 years later, bless her heart, she was sitting in my office and we were talking and smoking and listening to the radio, waiting for the verdict to come down. And I still can remember as clear as day when they said not guilty. And my jaw dropped, and I looked at Rhonda, and I said, "Oh, my God, things are going to get really ugly. What I didn't know was how quickly they were going to get so ugly, because within an hour, the violence was pretty close. Fires were already lit everywhere, and they were starting to come up La Cienega Boulevard towards where the radio station was. You know, I mentioned this to David last night. The one thing I couldn't understand, and I still don't when it comes to rioting, because we've had a few incidents since, is, you know, L.A. is a big sprawling city. It's a lot of small cities all, you know, patchwork together. But where Florence and Normandy was, again, it was just south of where the radio station was. And we were on the edge of Culver City. And just another couple of miles north, if you go straight up La Cienega Boulevard, you hit Beverly Hills. Well, the rioters burnt down and looted their own community, their own stores, many locally owned stores. And they had, if they had gone 5 miles up the road, you know, they could have destroyed Beverly Hills. Although David made a good point, as he often does, which was, you know, think of the firepower that it would have come out to defend the Beverly Hills stores and properties that didn't come out to defend those in, you know, East L.A., Central L.A. Anyway, I couldn't, you know, I remember getting out of town that weekend. I honestly have no memory of where I went. I just know that I went. I was living in Santa Monica, and we had no idea how far it was going to spread. Just such a travesty. And I would hope back then, I know I hoped, I thought 25 years later, things would be oh so much better. No such luck. Anyway, here we are. It is today, the 28th of April, 2017, and things aren't a whole lot better. In fact, in many ways, they're worse. Just look and see who's in the White House. Oh, my goodness. We'll take a break, and we'll come back in a little bit with our friend Craig Pallast to talk about the best democracy money can buy, stolen elections, caging lists, and oh so much more. It is the Friday edition of the Nicole Sandler Show. Thank you for being here. Don't go away.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Saturday officially marks the 100th day of Donald Trump's administration.
100 days! 100 nights!
100 days. We are 6.8% of the way home. Paid for by anybody else, 2020.
To commemorate the milestone, he's given a number of interviews, including one with Reuters, in which he admitted,
"This is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier." I thought it was more of a, I'm a details-oriented person, I think you would say that, but I do miss my old life. This, I like to work, so that's not a problem, but this is actually more work. And while I had very little privacy in my old life, because, you know, I've been famous for a long time, I really, this is much less privacy than I've ever seen before. I mean, this is, you know, something that's really amazing.
He thought getting rid of NAFTA was going to be easy, too. Remember this?
NAFTA was the worst trade deal in the history of this country.
Somebody said to me, "What are you starting on NAFTA?" I said, "Wait a minute, I did this. I've been here like 51 days. Give me a chance."
We're going to do something with NAFTA that you are going to be very, very impressed with. That's going to be an easy one, folks. That's going to be an easy one.
Not so fast, Mr. Apprenticident.
Well, I was going to terminate NAFTA as of 2 or 3 days from now. The president of Mexico, who I have a very, very good relationship, called me. And also the prime minister of Canada, who I have a very good relationship, and I like both of these gentlemen very much, they called me. And they said, rather than terminating NAFTA, could you please renegotiate? I like them very much. I respect their countries very much. The relationship is very special. And I said, I will hold on the termination. Let's see if we can make it a fair deal. Because NAFTA has been a horrible deal for the United States. It's been very good for Canada. It's been very good for Mexico. But it's been horrible for the United States. So they asked me to renegotiate. I will. And I think we'll be successful in the renegotiation, which frankly would be good because it would be simpler. And so I decided, rather than terminating NAFTA, which would be a pretty big, you know, shock to the system, we will renegotiate.
Are you sorry that you-
He also said that we might have a war with North Korea.
Well, there's a chance that we could end up having a major, major conflict with North Korea. Absolutely.
Saturday is the official 100th day, but Saturday night was supposed to be the White House Correspondents' Dinner with the Oval Office resident, the most notable no-show. Why, you ask?
I'm treated very unfairly and very dishonestly by the press, and I thought it was inappropriate to go this year. If I were treated even slightly fairly by the press, I would have gone. But I mean, they're writing stories about how unfairly I get treated by the press.
Speaking of the press, Reporters Without Borders just released its World Press Freedom Index for 2017. The United States now ranks 43rd, down 2, just below Burkina Faso and Belize. They cite the election of Donald Trump, who declared the press a, quote, enemy of the American people in a series of verbal attacks toward journalists while attempting to block White House access to multiple media outlets in retaliation for critical reporting. They also note that, quote, despite the bleak outlook under Trump, it bears repeating that his predecessor left behind a flimsy legacy for press freedom and access to information. Journalists continue to be arrested for covering various protests around the country, with several currently facing criminal charges. To this day, American journalists are still not protected by a federal shield law guaranteeing their right to protect their sources and other confidential work-related information. In other news, Sean Spicer stepped in it again on Thursday when he was peppered with questions about how Michael Flynn could have made it through the vetting process to become Dump's national security advisor. And Spicer did what the 45th administration keeps doing. He blamed it on Obama.
He was issued a security clearance under the Obama administration in the spring of 2016.
The Obama administration? It went on like that.
In the Obama administration, during the Obama administration, under the Obama administration.
To be fair to Sean, it is a legitimate question as to whether the Army and the Defense Department under Obama renewed Flynn's security clearance without sufficient diligence, especially given that Russian trip and the Russian money. But that is not the same thing as appointing and vetting Flynn to one of the top national security positions in the U.S. government. And remember, Obama fired Flynn from a lower position in the national security community.
On Friday morning, the Orange One signed an executive order reversing President Obama's restrictions on gas and oil drilling in the Atlantic and Arctic Oceans, and Congress passed a continuing resolution to keep the government open for one more week. And finally, the numbers are in, showing the U.S. economy grew just 0.7% in the first quarter, the weakest showing in 3 years. Way to go, Mr. Resident. If you appreciate these What's New segments and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener supported. Find all the details at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
I need to explain the Amazon portal, I think, because I got an email from a wonderful listener last night who said, I called Amazon and nobody knows what I'm talking about. They won't. You see, Amazon has an affiliates program and I'm just one of many. And the way it works is I have an account and basically I've got my own link. So using my link, which I call the Amazon portal, you can go to NicoleSandler.com, scroll down that homepage and you'll see the Amazon logo. I call it the Amazon portal. And it looks just like you log on to Amazon.com, except there's a code embedded in there that gives me a small commission on anything you buy when you enter Amazon through that link, through my Amazon portal. So Amazon won't know anything about it because they've got thousands of companies and people and blogs and shows and stuff that have their own Amazon portal. Yes, or porthole, as Boca says. So I feel terrible that this listener called Amazon and was trying to track down the Nicole Sandler Show Amazon portal. You can get it from NicoleSandler.com. All the details are right there on the website. There's lots of stuff on the website. So I hope you will, explore. You know, with the weekend here, go ahead, go to NicoleSandler.com. You can explore. One thing that I'm going to be working on this weekend, I hope, is starting the vault. So anybody who's a subscriber to the show, and you know I don't have the show behind a paywall, so anybody who contributes at all will have access to bonus content and the stuff that I'm going to put in the vault, which is a lot of, frankly, a lot of stuff from my music radio days and some other interviews that I conduct and don't get a chance to, use on the show and things like that. So there will be some good bonus content every now and again for those of you who, reach into your pocket every now and then and contribute to help keep us going. That's how some of us have to roll. We go, we do the work because it's there, because we have to do it. One of those people is our friend Greg Palast, who has been on the show many times. I gotta say, I always love having Greg on the program. Today he's here by popular demand. Because he's got a few diehard fans in our YouTube chat room, and I've promised them, yes, I will invite Greg back on the show soon, and, for good reason. In case you're not familiar with Greg Palast, he's an investigative reporter. His news-breaking stories appear on BBC Television, The Guardian. Now he's got an outlet here in the U.S. in Rolling Stone magazine. But he does cover things, election disparities and such. Like, it was Greg Palast who uncovered how Katherine Harris and Jeb Bush stole the president election here in Florida in 2000. And now Greg Palast has released a new movie. It's called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. It's based on his New York Times best-selling books. It's half documentary, half star-studded movie featuring Rosario Dawson, Shailene Woodley, Willie Nelson, Ice-T, and a cast of thousands. Donald Trump said the election is rigged. Palast says Donald should know because his buddies rigged it. The film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, follows Greg Palast on his investigation of Dump's wild claims. And along the way, Palast finds billionaires gone wild, a secret hit list of a million Americans who lost their vote, and the real story of the theft of the 2016 election. And before I bring Greg on, I just have to play for you how this movie begins. Because any movie that starts like this, I love.
Fuck you. Yeah, you piss me off. You're a piece of shit, Just like another white boy. White Southern boy trash, You motherfucker.
My name's Palast.
Fuck you.
Greg Palast.
I'm an investigative reporter. I hunt billionaires who misbehave. And every 4 years, I become a crime reporter. The crime, election theft.
Greg Palast, welcome back to the show, buddy.
Hey, glad to be here. And by the way, I just heard you requesting that people support your work. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
The first 10 people, no, I'm going to go wild. The first 25 people who donate to your site to keep you alive and on the air, we'll get a link to the film free, the updated new version of the Best Democracy Money Can Buy that you just heard. We haven't changed the opening, though.
No,
so
the
you're safe.
The opening is awesome. It is so classic.
The
first time I watched it, when it comes on and you see this weathered old fisherman, fuck you. It's like, I love it already. Love it already.
Well, actually, it's very relevant to the news on the front pages today, that scene, because that old fisherman is actually the leader of the Eskimo in the Arctic.
Yes.
Etok. Unfortunately, since the film was actually just before the film was released, he passed away on the ice because he was a great whaler. And if you have like a heart attack or something on the ice in the Arctic, well, that's the end.
Mm.
So he went out on the ice, and he has no regret. I'm sure that's the life he wanted. But I'll tell you this: the one thing he didn't want, the reason why he's screaming at me and saying you white boy Southern trash, is that I was questioning why we should care about what's going to happen to the Eskimo who live in the Arctic if they have drilling.
Mm-hmm.
The scene opens, because if you don't know, if you haven't seen The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and apparently you've seen it more than once, I'm actually inside a whale carcass, which is is gigantic.
It's
bigger than like four houses. And he's saying, look, we live, catching whales isn't some National Geographic for the cameras deal. This is how we live. We survive on hunting and fishing here in the Arctic. And the whales and seals and reindeer just do not like hydrocarbon, and they leave.
Mm.
And he said, that's the end of us. We're the last of the Pleistocene people, and we're finished if these drillers start drilling. And they were literally about to drill right at his village at Kaktovik and in the Arctic Circle. And you'll see this in the film. And Shell Oil had plans to drill there with Exxon. And what happened is Obama, in his last days in office, suddenly put the kibosh on drilling in the Arctic, in most of the Arctic.
And today? Now
Trump is Trump, and then I explain the film why they want to drill there, and it's not really that they want that oil for. It's not so much Shell and Exxon that's the push there. It's actually, I'm not giving away much in the film. It's the Koch brothers, because they bought into the Alaska pipeline. There's no oil left to go through the pipeline. It's going to shut down because there's literally not enough oil to keep the flow going.
Right.
So they need that Arctic oil to keep their pipeline alive, and so the Koch brothers are actually behind this reopening of the Arctic to drilling, because actually Shell and Exxon are not too crazy about going back in, but I think they're going to be forced to almost because the Kochs need that oil for the pipe.
Oh my God!
So there you go. So that's it. So that's in the news today. So
yep.
Trump yesterday opened up drilling back at that place that Obama has just killed off there in the Arctic, which you'll see in the film. And this, and the whole point of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is that this is why they have to steal elections, because sane people aren't going to vote for them to do these things, to destroy the Arctic, to destroy the last, it's ethnic cleansing, to destroy the last of the native communities that still live by subsistence in this planet. And that's what they're doing. I mean, the Russians are doing it. And Obama locked it off. I'm just sorry that he decided to lock it off in his last days after being in 8 years and dawdling on it, because the problem is that within 6 months of a presidential order, it can be reversed, and that's what.
Oh, is
Trump
that
is
what
it's?
See, and I thought it was just because he did it by executive order, so Trump could undo it by executive order, which is what he did yesterday, and so now. With a sign of his pen and his, that childish signature, he's undone it and opened up not only the Arctic, but the Atlantic off the coast of Florida where I live. So two pristine areas, something that Obama probably could have done earlier, as you mentioned, and could have done by legislation. I mean, it seems like a lot of what happened with Obama during those years was we were having to fight so hard to get things that he should have done automatically because he was, one of the good guys, allegedly. Now, everything that he did grudgingly is being undone by these executive orders. this chief.
Yeah, and it's the executive orders, and of course, if you leave it up, and also there were some votes in the House and in Senate overturning executive orders, because they have 6 months. Congress, if there's a regulation, they can also overturn regulations by the Obama administration within 6 months of their being put into place.
So amazing.
We had some, you know, things that, that, you know, again, that they waited till the last minute, like the Clean Air Act. We have people are dropping dead from dirty, filthy air. It's not about, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about climate warming and what will happen in 50 years and all that stuff. I'm not talking 50 years.
Talking about now.
I'm talking like right now in Toledo, right now in Akron, right now in places where people are choking to death on filth.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened now. The statistics are horrific. You're talking about 100,000 people a year dying because of this filthy air.
Right. And
you know, that's now. It's not about, we can talk about global warming, but, you know, that. A lot of voters don't realize, you know, they say, oh, that's tree-hugging stuff, that's Al Gore, that's out in the future. You know, someone will, you know, Tesla will come up with something that will save us all.
Yeah, no. No.
But it's right now.
Right. Someone like me who, smoked cigarettes for a minute and a half when I was younger, you know, a quarter of a century ago, gets lung cancer. You know, how does that happen? Gee, I wonder, because we're breathing in all this crap. We have Miami Beach that's underwater at high tide now. You know, all this stuff. We can't wait for somebody to come along and save us. The stuff needed to be in the pipeline, so to speak, already. And now we have Dump. I call him Dump. It's a contraction of his name. It's, you know, just a shorthand way of saying it without having to say his actual name.
Pronounced, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Exactly. No, and so he's coming along, and any even minor protections that were in place, he's undoing. It's just, it's sickening. So, Greg Palast,
yes.
When The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the film came out, it was really, I mean, it was dealing with former elections. It seems like every election. Let's talk about the last quarter of a century, it seems, has been stolen. And and this one was no different. And we go even further than this one. Let's go to a couple of weeks ago and what happened in Georgia. They're all interrelated,
right.
Aren't they?
Absolutely. So let me lay this out. And again, it's not giving away anything from the film, but I will give away the film if you support Nicole's tremendous work. 25 people will get a private link to the update of the film The Best Democracy Money Can Buy.
Thank you.
Including seeing an enraged Eskimo. And so what happened is, let's go back to 2000, where I uncovered that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush removed thousands of black folk from the voter rolls,
mm-hmm.
because they said that they were ex-cons, felons, criminals, you know, mother rapers and father stabbers who were trying to vote, and exactly zero of them were, of these people that were removed, were illegal voters. Zero. And, however, they were overwhelmingly black, and as you'll see in the film, I wasn't guessing. We do this as a cartoon, by the way. If you're wondering who did that, those wonderful cartoons, it's
Ted
Keith
Raw.
Tucker Drew Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, wow.
So we have, so that's why we had all that cool stuff in there, and, but in this cool cartoon, we show you that there's exactly zero of the thousands of black men who were removed. And we know they were black because it said BLA next to their names. And that's how George W. was elected. Then in 2004, we had something called caging. Bobby Kennedy's in the film and explains that. That's how Ohio and other states were stolen. That was how Bush got reselected, not reelected. We move on to, then you say, well, what happened in 2008 and 2012? How did Obama win? The answer is, and Bobby Kennedy and I wrote for Rolling Stone on this and did a deep investigation. There were 6 million votes, 5.9 million votes stolen in 8, and at least that many in 12. It's just that Obama was able to overwhelm the steal. In fact, we talked to him about it. He knew all about it, but he said he didn't like to bring up these issues. It would remind people, It would remind people that he was black, you know.
Yes,
kind of trying to be post-racial. But it's really about, most of the vote suppression in America is about wiping out the votes of minorities because they're the most vulnerable. They're the easiest to say, oh, that a black guy is a former criminal, and they don't have the ability to scream the way a lot of white folk do. So that's the game. And then in 16, you'll see in the film, so I say, how are they going to steal it in 16? Now, what's interesting is that the film you've seen, Nicole, is the one where that happens before the election, where I say, I released the film in September saying, here's how Trump is going to steal it. Now I'm updating the film so I can say, my new subtitle is I Told You So, So Now Listen Up.
Oh.
Because we're heading into a steal of 2018.
Yes.
And what happened was is that, if you see the film, and by the way, this is Greg Palast yakking at you. If you see the film, you'll know that they're using a trick called cross-check, which has wiped 1.1 million people off the voter rolls, a huge number in Georgia. And in the Georgia 6th, I actually investigated this scheme used by the Republican Secretary of State of Georgia to wipe out minority voters, and they were heavily in Georgia's 6th congressional district, which is north. There's white suburbs of North Atlanta, but there's Alpharetta, and in the African-American areas, they were just slicing through the voter rolls. And this
Amazing.
Is why the Democrat in that race, I'm not for one party or the other, but I am for counting the votes. If it weren't for the basic purging, illegal purging of the voter rolls, there'd be no runoff. The Democrat
That's right.
won.
That's right. Fix. Right. John Ossoff, who won, who came so close to the 50% plus one vote he needed. And, you know, he just, what was it, like 1.9%. shy of that. Now, not only the voter caging, as you just described, Greg Palast, but there was another thing where some machines were stolen. Are you up on that
yeah.
as well?
Because yes. Well, what happens is that, in fact, we have something in the, and you can see this also clips from that film at gregpalast.com or Facebook. But again, donate to Nicole. She didn't know. This is not set up beforehand. This is a surprise.
Yeah.
You're going to have to send me people's names and emails or something and pass it on. You'll get the free copy of the film, which is, by the way, if you don't want to get a free copy, you can always download it from Amazon or whatever or buy the DVD. But in the film, we have a section on the ten ways to steal the vote. And one of them is called spoilage. And votes don't spoil because you leave them out of the fridge. The nasty secret of American democracy is that we don't count about 2.7 million votes in any election. That's the typical for a presidential election. When I say not counted, they mark them uncountable. Now, what does that mean? It means that they have machines that can't count them or the machines lost the vote. You know, someone petted their cat and boom, the card is erased. Now, very important for people to know, this is not about someone in a cave throwing a switch and changing your vote from Republican to Democrat or Democrat to Republican. No fancy, you know, some brilliant Moriarty dipping into the computers. It's real dumb. The computers simply don't work properly, so they don't record the vote.
Wow.
They simply don't record it, or it's lost. Basically they don't work. So the best way to steal a vote with computerized voting, as they have in Georgia, is you unplug the machine,
mm-hmm.
where the machine can't open or the machine isn't recording, and that's what you were seeing in Georgia. So the reason to steal the vote is just to kind of wreck the machines,
mm-hmm.
to sabotage them, not to play with the software to change your vote, but to just make it unreadable.
Although that's simple. Not unheard of. That has happened, right,
no.
as we know full well.
Mm. Florida, let me get, you had, okay, you'll dig this. In the 2000 race, while I uncovered that they're removing black people from the voter rolls,
mm-hmm.
that's how George Bush got elected by merely 537 votes in Georgia, not counting tens of thousands of black men removed from the rolls, but 28,000 ballots were never counted in Jacksonville because they had computer glitches in reading those ballots. Now, the ballots, by the way, could have been read by hand. But now Jacksonville, of course, the at the center of the city where the precincts were that weren't counted. I mean, zero vote. You have to understand, you had precincts with zero vote for president. Zero vote for president. All of them minority districts. And you also had that type of wipeout in Florida when Catherine Harris, hey, Kate, if you're listening in, Catherine Harris stepped out of her congressional seat to run for Senate. Her replacement was elected by just about 5,000 votes because you had, in black precincts, a zero vote for Congress to replace her seat, a zero vote, and that was because machines were glitched. They're in black neighborhoods. They said, well, we don't know how people could have voted. By the way, in states like New York, you rerun the vote. If a computer problem causes, you know, more than a 1 or 2% shift, or leaves open, if you can't read 1 or 2% of the ballots, you literally rerun the race. And there's no reason not to.
And in Florida, of course, they wouldn't do that. And back in 2000, there was no paper ballot. There was no paper trail. We just had the electronic touchscreen voting machines, or you had the hanging chads. We had that,
punch cards. So that's exactly the game that's played. And here's the deal. If it were random, if it were white people, black people, any people, purple people, if it were random that your vote weren't counted, if it were random that your chad was hung, it's not random. According to the U.S. Civil Rights Commission that analyzed these non-counted votes, the chance your ballot will spoil, not be counted, is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white.
Wow.
And that's the ugly statistic. And there are 2.7 million votes not counted. You do the math, and you see it's not just Ossoff and the Georgia Six.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over America, but especially in those areas where Republicans control the voting process.
Right.
And they know machines are going to go bad, just like we saw this in Michigan.
Yeah.
Trump lost Michigan. And in the update of my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, you'll see my report on Michigan, or you can just watch that at gregpalace.com. I went to Michigan afterwards. Trump lost. It wasn't even close.
But Rick Snyder is the governor, and he's a Republican and runs, whoever. It's just like Jeb Bush was governor here in Florida in 2000. Rick Snyder is governor in Michigan now. So there were some shenanigans going on, huh?
And you also have the problem. In Michigan, there were 75,355 votes, ballots never counted.
Wow.
75, they weren't blank, but because the machines couldn't read them, because they had broken down 81 machines in Detroit and Flint. Now, who lives in Detroit and Flint?
Black people.
It's not exactly Trump voters in Detroit and Flint.
Nope.
Okay. So 75,000 votes were not counted because of bad machines, but there's a great machine that could recount them called the human eyeball, because the human eyeball can see the mark that the machines couldn't. So Jill Stein paid for the eyeball, what they call the recount, which is a misnomer. It was not a recount, Nicole. It was a count of the ballots that were never previously counted, and they were overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton, so no question that Trump's 10,000 vote margin is going to be swamped once you read the 75,000 votes.
Right.
Ballots that were not counted. So his lawyers, the Trump team, went in and convinced the federal judge that Jill Stein had no standing, because no matter how many votes you count, she wasn't going to win the state. Right,
right.
So the judge simply said, if Hillary Clinton comes in or if her lawyers who were there in the courtroom will stand up and say, we want those votes counted, I'll authorize the count to continue. And her lawyers sat there, silent. And their only comment is, we are just here to observe. And because Hillary Clinton wouldn't say a word, the count of those ballots was stopped.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's one of the problems we have, is that we don't have a Democratic Party willing to stand up for the black voters who've lost their votes. It's black and it's Hispanics, Asians,
right,
and a student, and the student vote. These are the vulnerable votes. If you see the film, we do it with a lot of humor and cartoons and stuff, and then there's some... Well, if you don't laugh at the beginning and cry at the end, I'll pay for your therapy. How about that?
That sounds good. Greg Palast is with us. By the way, in addition to the film, there's a slew of books. You know, I've got Vulture's Picnic up there on the shelf in my hand here. I have Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. And here you only had 9 easy steps on how to steal an election. I guess there's a 10th one now.
Well, the 10th was this thing called cross-check. Which
that's what I was going to ask you about next. Cross-check, courtesy of our friend and not really Chris Kobach, who become a household name because of this program called cross-check, which is a really nefarious practice. You want to tell everyone what cross-check is?
Yes. Well, first of all, let's talk about Chris Kobach, as he
Kobach.
Called it, because he's
okay.
That German name. And it's like it's Coke with a couple letters added.
Got it. Kobach.
And he's same place, Wichita, Kansas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the film, I jumped this guy. But you have to know, he's the guy who wrote SB 1070, the driving while black law. He's
wow.
the guy who came with the Muslim tracking law. He's the one who came up with the Muslim exclusion, by the way.
Oh, my.
He's the real... This guy is like the Dr. Moriarty. He's no fool. He went to Yale, Harvard, and Oxford. And he's the guy who came up with all these schemes. But the one scheme that hasn't been noticed nationally, which I uncovered for Rolling Stone and is in the film, is called interstate cross-check. Now, what is that? If you listen to Trump, when he says millions of people are voting illegally, he specifically says people are registered and voting twice
right.
in the same election in 2 states. So that's what the media has completely, completely missed in America, which is the rest of Trump's statement. Not just that they're illegal voters, but he says how they do it. And the main way he says is that they vote, that there are 3 million people
right.
voting in 2 states.
Sure.
That
did they all
Kobach.
Fly now, like from one city to from one state to another on election day to vote twice? That's
well,
what
or you can do you know an absentee ballot or something
I
like that.
It.
But the
yeah.
truth is that so okay. So where are these double voters? So I asked for the list.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the thing: if Trump just shot his mouth off and said people are voting twice, who cares? That's as far as the media goes. They get all these experts on, like my buddy Ari Berman, say, "Oh, that's all. That's not true. It's nonsense."
Right.
Ha ha. It's just he's an idiot. Okay, but that's not. He's no idiot. He's a very wise fool, Mr. Trump.
Yes.
Because what he said is this becomes the excuse for vote. Very sophisticated vote suppression tactics. Because what Kobach did, he actually put together a list of the 3 million people voting twice and passed them out among his Republican voting chiefs in 30 states, including Michigan, including North Carolina, Ohio, not Florida anymore, but, you know, in these swing states. And that was the difference in several states, Arizona. And now what he's done is now, wait, but if people are voting twice, I agree, they shouldn't be allowed to vote. In fact, they should be in prison. But in fact, I only know of 2 cases in the past 10 years of someone being convicted of voting twice. It's a felony.
It doesn't happen.
Slammer
right.
for 5 years.
Right.
And so not 3 million people. So I asked for the list. I said, give me the list of these criminals. You can't see because it's a criminal investigation. They have 3 million suspects. Well, I finally, you know, I'm Greg Palast. I'm an investigative reporter.
Yes,
I get this stuff. You can't tell me. If you say you're not going to give it to me, I'm going to get it anyway. That's my thing. And as you see in the film, I get the list, and you can see in the film the list, which I got for Rolling Stone originally, which is where you see who they accuse of voting twice. And in Georgia, for example, where we just had the runoff, they accused 288 guys named James Brown of voting a second time in another state because they found a guy named James Brown voting in Alpharetta in the 6th District.
Amazing.
And then they found a James Brown, believe it or not, in Motown in Detroit. And they said, it's got to be the same guy. Even though, and I'm not making this up, even though the middle, it's James Thomas Brown
right.
in Georgia, and James Edward Brown in Detroit. And they mixed, by the way, also James Brown Jr. and James Brown Sr.
Right. And the third.
They didn't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
The idea is just to knock off these folks, and they're overwhelmingly voters of color, because who has these common names? 85 of the top of the most common last names, 85 out of 100 of the top most common last names in America are minority names. Mm. Rodriguez, Hernandez, Kim, Lee, Chung.
Right.
You get a James Brown.
Yep.
John Washington.
Yep.
That's your common names in America, and they didn't care if the middle names didn't match because they want to knock off everyone they could, and no one will stand up for these voters. The Democratic Party absolutely will not stand up for these voters. There's a couple rare exceptions. Eric Holder has finally stepped forward on this.
Really?
Unfortunately, he waited till
a little
he
too
stepped
late.
Out of his
right.
In fact, that's his middle name, Eric Too Late Holder. the other is actually the head of the Georgia Democratic Party, Stacey Abrams, who's fantastic. Oh. But you know, she's kind of, you know, she's up against a Republican Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who makes Catherine Harris look like Thomas Jefferson in high heels.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unreal. Hey, we're running short on time. A half hour flies by when I'm talking with Greg Palast. But one name jumped out at me. I was looking, Greg, at the FEC filings when they released the names of all the people who donated to Donald, Dump's inaugural committee. Mm-hmm. And by the way, many, many millions of dollars more collected than they needed. And now it's just this unaccountable slush fund that's there. But Paul the Vulture Singer donated more than $1 million to Dump's inaugural committee. This is a guy who you made famous in Vulture's Picnic. That was what book that was from. And there he is. He's still out there doing his vulture thing, huh? And aligned with Donald Trump.
He's also in the film, Paul the Vulture Singer. And what's worse, he's not just out there, but he's in there. Paul Singer, known as the Vulture, I think his name stuck because I kind of gave it to him
yes.
for his vulture activities.
But
he's known as a vulture investor. He finds nations, people, companies that are dying. He buys them up and then strips them of their assets and their wealth. And he's very good at this. You'll learn about him in his asset stripping game. It's pretty tragic. He stole the money meant for cholera medicine in the Congo. I can't even make that up. It's so ugly. I try to jump him in the film. It doesn't always work out. But you're laughing because there's some funny scenes there.
Yes, there are.
But, you know, after all, I'm probably the only American reporter that actually does stakeouts and jumps as we do in Britain. And but one of the things about he didn't support Trump, by the way. He said Donald Trump's elected president, we'll have a worldwide depression. So why did he give Trump $1 million for his inaugural?
Yeah.
When he said this guy will cause a depression. Number one, a depression is good for the vulture. He was kind of complimenting
That's
Trump.
That's right.
Because he makes his money from destruction.
He's a disaster capitalist.
Badly.
He's a shock doctrine kind of guy.
Right. Yeah, that's where he makes his money. But the other is that Donald Trump in his kind of psychobabble hour-long press conference that he gave, that his one press conference, said, I just left Paul Singer, who was in my office, by the way. Why does Trump call the Oval Office my office? But that's another issue. But so the vulture was in his office. Not one reporter said, why is the vulture in your office? The answer is because the Trump care, Ryan care, was never meant was not an improvement as was promised by Trump. It was really a tax cut. Parading as a health program,
right.
And the biggest tax cut went to the vulture.
Yep.
Now, because that went down, he didn't get his tax cut, which is removing a spend. Obama, the most progressive thing he did in his entire time in office, by the way, was to levy a 3.8% tax on speculators' profits. And he did that very quietly. That's what subsidized Obamacare. It's a great thing he did, but now Trump tried to undo it by undoing Obamacare, which is really to get rid of this tax on speculators. But in this week's edition of, you know, of Trump goes wild, right, and cuts taxes. Yes, they're slashing corporate taxes. Yes, they're slashing his taxes. But he also knocked out, he would knock out the special tax on speculators' profits. By the way, that tax was hitting speculators for $15.7 billion. And now these speculators, you have to be a millionaire to even be hit by this tax. So, you know, I mean, this is just an unbelievable giveaway to guys like Paul the Vulture Singer, who you'll meet in the film. And that's why they had to steal the election, because if you don't, there's not enough white guys to have elected Donald Trump.
Right.
That's the demographic truth. So if you, the only way that these guys can win, like the Vulture and the Kochs, is if you knock out the votes of the non-white guys.
And that's what they do. And that's what you find out about in The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the movie. Greg Palast has made a very generous offer. First 25 people who make a donation to the show will get a code to watch the movie online. But everybody can get it. Go to gregpalast.com. There's a place right there where you can purchase it. You can get links to buy any of the books. There's a bunch of them. Greg Palast, it had been too long. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's never get enough of Greg Palast here.
Thanks a lot, Nicole.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Greg Palast, really good guy, great reporter. Thanks to our friend Lisa in the YouTube chat room for being such a big fan and rattling my cage to get him back on the show. That's it for the week. I should be back Monday for the music show. If not, I'll put up a note in the chat room. But I will see you back then. Tomorrow, the Climate March. I know Earth Day was last week, but that's okay. Get out, make signs, be heard. There no one can sit on the sidelines now. All right. Thanks for listening. I'm going to leave you, speaking of the Climate March, with Brad and Desi and the Green News Report. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
Today, we are putting the states back in charge. It's a big thing.
Trump moves to review and maybe revoke national monuments.
Sky-high flames forcing thousands from their homes.
Florida calls out National Guard to fight drought-fueled wildfires. Even oil companies predict a surge in electric cars. People's Climate March to demand climate action. Plus, sea level rise estimates doubled thanks to the melting Arctic.
Thanks, melting Arctic. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Today I'm signing a new executive order to end another egregious abuse of federal power.
You're signing an executive order to fire yourself? Cool. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Republicans in the state of Florida have been denying climate change and global warming for years. And well, once again, it looks like they're paying the price for that.
Yes, unfortunately, it does look like that.
My driveway leading to my house looks like another planet.
This used to be a home.
Florida's wildfires are still raging out of control.
These fires are dangerous. They're extremely dangerous. We have to be very cautious.
Florida Governor Rick Scott has called out the state's National Guard to help fight the more than 100 out-of-control wildfires that have destroyed dozens of homes and forced the evacuation of thousands in tinderbox conditions caused by high winds and drought. And it's not just in Florida. Wildfire season in the United States is already 400% above normal for this time of year.
So for Florida, the water is rising up. And the trees are burning down.
That's right. President Trump accelerated his assault on the environment and public lands on Wednesday, ordering a review of all national parks and monuments created by previous presidents since 1996.
Today I'm signing a new executive order to end another egregious abuse of federal power and to give that power back to the states and to the people where it belongs.
Although couched as a local control issue, critics charge the administration's real goal is to strip valuable public lands of protected national monument status to open them up to industry for drilling, mining, logging, and potentially to be sold off. No president in U.S. history has ever revoked a previous president's national monument protections created under the Antiquities Act. Nothing in the law allows for it, but the Trump administration is going to try. The move was slammed by the Outdoor Industry Association, which said their industry generates nearly $900 billion in local economic activity and tourism and creates more than 7 million jobs in the U.S., far more than the fossil fuel industry.
I love this comment from his signing ceremony.
The previous administration used a 100-year-old law known as the Antiquities Act. Have you heard about that?
Yes, yes, we've heard about it. It's a 100-year-old law. It doesn't make it any less valid.
Trump will also sign another executive order to reopen pristine protected waters in the Arctic and the Atlantic Oceans to offshore drilling, which had been protected by President Obama under directives that banned drilling until 2022 in some areas and permanently in others. Environmental groups and Native American tribes say they will sue to challenge the stripping of protections from public lands, monuments, and those pristine ocean areas. Meanwhile, a new study projects that global sea level rise may unfold twice as fast as previously predicted due to global warming.
Great.
The new faster estimate comes from the Arctic Monitoring Assessment Program and is based on new data showing the rate of ice melt is accelerating in the Arctic and in Greenland, projecting a minimum of 2 feet and a worst case scenario of 8 feet of sea level rise by 2100. That's double the rate predicted just a few years ago by the United Nations.
This is all going really well. Perhaps I should say going swimmingly.
The study authors also say the Arctic is now locked in to dramatic changes through 2050. But they also say what happens after that depends largely on the choices we make today. Sea level rise will also force millions around the world to relocate, including here in the United States. Another study out this week warns that the central United States will see an influx of climate refugees as people retreat from rising seas on the coast. But some good news. Even oil companies are now predicting a surge in electric cars. This week, Total SA, one of the world's largest oil companies, projected that electric vehicles will make up a third of all new vehicles by 2030, thanks to the declining cost of batteries that make them increasingly competitive with conventional gasoline cars. Finally, the People's Climate March is on Saturday, April 29th, around the U.S. and around the world to demand action on climate change and to advance the goals of the People's Climate March. Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont on Thursday introduced new legislation in the Senate to put the U.S. on a path to 100% clean, renewable energy by 2050.
So much marching, so little time before it's too late. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. We lived, yeah. It ain't over yet, ain't over yet. So move.